So, welcome everybody. It's always very nice for me to come to the Buddhist Library. When I first came to Singapore in 1987, the first Dharma talk I gave was at the Buddhist Library. Not this building, not the one before, but I think the one before that. Yeah. And so every time I come since then, I give a talk. So I feel, I really like it. Also, I have a very nice connection with Bhante and really appreciate what he has done for Buddhism in Singapore. Yeah, because he's been here. He was here for years and years and years. Set up the Buddhist Library, dealt with all the things of having to set up a society. And he was always so welcoming and so, I'll talk a little bit more about him as I get into the talk. So tonight's topic is I was asked to speak about the Bodhisattva path. Yeah. Which is one of my favorite things to talk about. I love talking about bodhicitta. And actually last night, I had a dream about it. Usually I don't remember my dreams, but this dream was so clear that in the morning when I woke up, I thought, did it happen? And then I realized, no, it didn't. But I was walking down the street with some Singaporeans, and they had a center somewhere that I don't know what country we were in, but there was a Dharma center. And then some other people came up to me in the dream and they said, we heard you talk about bodhicitta. Tell us more about bodhicitta. Yeah, tell us more. And I was so happy in the dream because it's one of my favorite topics to talk about. Yeah. So, and then when I woke up, it's like, did that happen? No. Yeah. But maybe sometime in the future. Okay. So we'll start this evening with a couple of recitations so that we take refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha and generate the bodhicitta motivation. Bodhicitta is the aspiration to become a fully awakened Buddha for the benefit of each and every sentient being. So it's quite an expansive idea, because usually we think about our own benefit, and bodhicitta is saying, all the sentient beings, the ones you like, that's not too bad. I can work for their benefit. The strangers, that's a bit harder. And the people we don't like your boss. Because Singaporeans always complain to me about their boss. Yeah, so you have to put your boss in the meditations about love and compassion. Is that hard or easy? Hard. How many of you are bosses and have to deal with employees who complain about you? Oh, nobody raises their hand. Okay. Yeah. And if I ask how many of you complain about your boss? Oh, now we're getting some people being honest. Yeah. So we have to include all those people. Yeah. And for me, it's equal. And especially what is going on in my country right now, the country where I live, I really don't agree with some things that are happening. And I have to cultivate love and compassion and bodhicitta towards all those people too, who I think are making a wreck of the country. So it's good Dharma practice, because we have to practice in our life with what's going on in our life. It's so easy to say, oh, I have compassion for the whole world. Yeah, until one person says something you don't like, and then, yeah. So, oh, I have infinite compassion. That's just, kind of a big generalization that we think when we're not near anybody that we don't like. Yeah. But really, to generate these qualities, it takes a lot of effort, a lot of work, and a lot of really looking deep inside of our heart and being honest with ourselves and questioning many things. Yeah. Like, this person did this. Why don't I like that? Yeah. What in me is saying, thou shalt not do that to the other person? Yeah? Why? Why am I so, when somebody insults you, why do you get angry? Yeah? You get angry when you get insulted? Yeah? Why do we get angry?
Because it's
What
me.
is, it's about us, yeah, but in what way is that threatening us? It's only some words. And yet we take those ro words as the truth. So, it's we have to look at these things and why do I get upset? And do I are th my reasons for getting upset really reasonable, or are they completely stupid? Yeah. So it's going on a journey and learning about ourselves. Okay, we got to start with doing some recitations. Like I said, taking refuge, generating bodhicitta, reciting the four immeasurables. We'll have a few minutes of silent meditation to quiet the mind, and then we'll have the talk. Let's cultivate our motivation. And remember that as intensely as we want happiness and don't want suffering, this, with the same level of intensity, every living being, no matter what life form they are, no matter whether we like them and get along with them or not, whether we know them or not, all of them have that same fervent wish to be happy and to avoid pain. And so, given that that is the truth, the situation, then why should we just take care of ourselves and not take care of others? If pain is not liked by anybody, shouldn't we work to dispel the pain of everybody? No matter whose pain it is. And if peace and happiness are wanted by everybody, shouldn't we try and work for the peace and happiness of everybody? So this really entails overcoming our self-centeredness and really opening our heart and our mind. So, with this kind of motivation, let's aspire for full awakening in order to best benefit each and every living being. So, I think all people, no matter who they are, at one level, are aware that everybody wants happiness and nobody wants pain. Yeah. But it's, see, and that pertains to us too. And we write about it, you know, at holiday time, at Chinese New Year, at Vesak, whatever holiday it is, we write, may everybody be happy. May everybody live in peace. Don't we? Don't we write that in the cards? Yeah. Do we live that? Or do we only write it? Yeah. So, you know, we have some work to do to get the understanding from here in our head down to here in our heart. Okay. What is the biggest hindrance to really caring about everybody? Yeah. If we really look, the biggest hindrance is our attachment to our favorite object. What is our favorite object? You're right, me. Thank you. You recognize I am your favorite object.
Not you.
No. You're you, I'm me. I mean, you just said that I am. Okay, yeah. So this is really how we think, isn't it? You know, I, me, my, and mine are the most important things in the world. Don't you think so? Yeah? Who do you think about when you first wake up in the morning? Me. And what I want. What's going to happen to me today? Yeah. Who's going to get in my way and bother me today? Okay. Well, do you think about people in the world that don't have enough food? Maybe when you read the newspaper, oh, that's such a pity, as you go and get breakfast for yourself. It's true, isn't it? Yeah. So this feeling of, you know, me as the most important one, we all have it. And this is the chief thing that blocks us from having love and compassion towards each and every living being. We have, you know, with this self-centered thought, we have what I call our rules of the universe. Okay. So check and see if you have any. I'm going to tell you my rules of the universe. And you check and see if you have any similar. Okay. First rule of the universe is I am always right. Second, I should always get what I want. Third, nobody should get in my way and bother me. Fourth, nobody should ever point out my faults or mistakes because I don't have any. And even if once in a while I make a small mistake, they shouldn't comment on it because it's that big. It's nothing. Yeah. Another rule of the universe, everybody should like me. Yeah. Nobody should insult me. Nobody should reject me. Nobody should do anything I don't like. Yeah. Some of you have these rules of the universe. Yeah. And when people don't live according to them, what happens? Rawr! Yeah. My anger is always justified. Their anger is never justified, especially when they get mad at me. Yeah, because nobody is allowed to get mad at me. What do you think? Some of you are nodding your heads. You know what I'm talking about. Some of you are elbowing your husband or wife and say, yeah, she's talking about you. Some of you are like looking, oh, what a beautiful ceiling. Okay, but think about it, you know? And so this incredible self-centeredness is really a very formidable object to, you know, opening our hearts and minds. Sometimes we think, oh, but I'm a Dharma practitioner. Yeah, I don't have that anymore. You know, I've given up all my worldly concerns. Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And then you look a little closer and what's most important? Your Dharma practice or somebody else's Dharma practice? Mine! Whose liberation do I work for? Mine! Yeah, I want other people to be happy too, but first me. Then maybe I'll consider other people. After they apologize for all the mean things they've done to me since beginningless time in samsara. Yeah. Okay. So my Dharma practice is more important than yours. Yeah, if I want to meditate, you better keep the room quiet. Yeah, because you're disturbing my meditation. Yeah, my study is more important. Yeah, my retreats are more important. It's always around me, I, my, and mine, isn't it? Yeah. So this really is a big obstacle. And it's not so easy to dismantle. Because we've had this kind of thought since beginningless time. Okay, so how do we dismantle it? Well, first of all, we have to own it. As long as we say, oh, I don't have that problem. I'm sweet, I'm innocent, I love everybody. As long as we don't acknowledge what's going on inside, then there's no opportunity to do anything about it. So often when we get criticized, we just got, you know, actually, yeah, when somebody criticizes us, we should say, thank you very much. Yeah, why? There's several reasons. First of all, when somebody criticizes us, the negative karma we created by criticizing other people in the past gets used up, gets experienced. So rather than have a lower rebirth due to this negative karma, we just get insulted. We get criticized. Not a big deal. Yeah? Okay. Second of all, when we get criticized, then we have to look inside and see, do I have that fault? Did I do that action? Yeah? And if the answer is yes, then we go, yay! Now I know what I need to work on in my Dharma practice. Yeah, because isn't attachment to reputation something we need to work on? Okay, so if somebody you know, jabs our attachment to reputation or criticizes us, you know, that's now it's time to say, okay, yeah, I looked. What that person said is correct. I hate to admit it, but they're right. So now I have to correct that fault. Yeah. If what somebody says is not right, then there's no reason to get angry. It's just the negative karma getting used up. You getting what I mean? You think you can practice it? Will you remember? Yes, I can practice it. Will you remember to practice it next time somebody criticizes you? Yeah. Or do you get mad at that person? How dare they? Okay. So this kind of, you know, introspection is very important if we want to generate love and compassion for each and every sentient being. And the four Brahma Viharas are directed towards all of them, not just towards the people that we know and the people we like. Okay? It's a quality really to be admired, isn't it? Don't you want the Buddha, aren't you, or put it this way, aren't you glad the Buddha has impartial love and compassion for all sentient beings and accepts you and will teach you no matter how you act towards the Buddha? That's, you look at that quality in the Buddha and you admire it and you're glad that he has it, because otherwise, if he didn't, he might kick you out. But the Buddha never does that. Okay, so we should try and emulate the Buddha and develop that quality in ourselves. Okay, to develop bodhicitta, yeah, overcoming our self-centeredness is very important. Another part of developing bodhicitta is cultivating a positive attitude towards other living beings and seeing them as lovable, okay? And to do this, there's a meditation on the kindness of others. And personally speaking, I found that when I do this meditation, it has really changed how I look at things, and it's helped me tremendously in my relationships with other people. Because previously, I didn't see everybody as kind. Yeah, the people who agree with me are kind. The people who do what I want are kind. Yeah, the people who ignore me are mean. The people who, you know, make me feel like I don't belong, they're mean. But meditating on the kindness, it's a very profound meditation. So there's different ways to do it. I'll tell you my favorite way, which is, you start with your family and your friends, and it's fairly easy to see their kindness. Although sometimes I don't know if we really appreciate our parents' kindness. I think more in Asia people do, but in my country, people don't always appreciate their parents' kindness. But when I think about it, when we're born, we come into this world, we cannot take care of ourselves. Yeah. As a baby, you're too hot, you're too cold, you can't put on a blanket, you can't take off the blanket. Yeah. You can't say, I'm hungry, please feed me. You go, wah! And wake your parents up in the middle of the night. Yeah. How would you feel if somebody you didn't know moved into your house and then in the middle of the night would come pounding on your bedroom door saying, "Feed me," crying hysterically. Well, yeah, would you like that? No. But if you have a baby, parents, yeah, do you get up and feed that child? Do you mind feeding that child? No, you love that child. They're a total stranger. They just moved into your house for the next 45 years. Yeah. And they wake you up in the middle of the night and you love them. Yeah. Can we take that kind of love and apply it to strangers who are not babies, who happen to be adults? They're the same in being strangers. Yeah. And they're not even waking you up in the middle of the night. So can you have love for them? It's something to think about. Mm-hmm. But when we look at our lives, like I said, we're born, we come into this world totally broke. Yeah, if you think you have financial problems now, when we were born, we really had financial problems. We had no bank account, no stocks, nothing, not even, you know, a clothes on our back. And what happened? People took us in. Yeah, they gave us food. They gave us clothing. They gave us shelter, medicine. And all we did was go, yeah, yeah. And when we got to the terrible twos, parents, you know about the terrible twos, where your child learns the word no. Yeah. But, and we did too, you know, after waking them up in the middle of the night for years, then when we got to the terrible twos, you know, anything mom and dad said, no, no, no. Am I telling the truth, parents? Those of you who are parents? Yeah. They just say no, flat out. Yeah. And then as they get a little bit older, they start pulling on your clothes saying, give me this, give me that. And that never stops. Yeah. They may not pull on your clothes, but all the time it's give me this, give me that. Yeah. I want more for my allowance. Please sweep the floor. Please make my dinner. No, I'm not even going to say please. Where's my dinner? Okay. I exist as a member of this house. Where's my food? Okay. Somebody should go out and earn the money to get it. Somebody else should go shopping. Somebody else should make it for me. And they should only make food I like. Otherwise, I'm going to go and make a fuss. Parents, right or wrong? Yeah, that's exactly it, isn't it? And they still love us. We did all of this. Mm-hmm. And what about our teachers? Yeah. When I was in grammar school, primary school. Okay. Sometimes somebody would pass around a note saying something to the effect of, at 10 o'clock, everybody drop their ruler. And so in the middle of a lesson the teacher's giving us, we all take our ruler and drop it. And then the teacher. And we all. But where would we be if our teachers didn't teach us? Where would we be? We wouldn't know anything. We wouldn't know how to talk. Other people taught us how to talk. They taught us how to read and write. They made us do our homework. But if they didn't, then we wouldn't have learned. Were you an easy child to raise, or did you create fusses and do things behind your parents' back and not exactly lie to them, but say some things that weren't exactly the truth? Anybody do that? Oh, okay, four or five people. Oh, I see. The rest of you, when you were young, when you were teenagers, you always told your parents the truth about where you were going and with who and what you were doing. Do you think I believe that? Yeah, you must think I'm pretty stupid. But if we really think, our family or whoever brought us up, our teachers, were incredibly kind. And without them investing their time and energy in us, we wouldn't be able to function in society. And what about strangers? Well, I don't know them, so who cares? That's often how we think. Or especially in Singapore, where it's really crowded. You're on the highway, you want to go somewhere, and there's so many cars in the highway. Why are these people here? They are in my way. They're strangers. You don't even know them. You haven't met them already. Okay. They want to cut in. You give them the finger. What, you think because I'm a nun, I don't know what that means? I was not born a nun, guys. And what about the people who work on the roads? And construction in general. Boy, Singapore has so much construction now, and it's so noisy. Have you noticed when they're building the building, clamp, chop, And like, why can't they just, not make so much noise? And when they're doing road work and you want to go somewhere, why are they doing the road work now? They should do it at 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm not driving. But do you want to do road work? Do you want to drive in roads that haven't been properly paved and repaired? No. So these people are actually quite kind to us, aren't they? They do the road work in the heat in Singapore. My goodness, it's so hot here. And they do the road work, they build the buildings that we all live in. Do we ever stop and say thank you? Thank you for building the MRT. Thank you for doing the road work. When I first came to Singapore in 1987 to give Dharma talks, Singapore had a law whereby you had to pick up all your trash, and if you didn't, then you had to put on some kind of uniform and go out and pick up the trash of other people along the roads. I heard they stopped that law. They need to put it back. I've been, because I walk a lot. I've walked a lot around Singapore. My goodness, there's trash everywhere. Not everywhere, that's exaggerated. Many places, you know. So much trash, people are not throwing their trash away. And that even if they do, the bins are overflowing. Oh no, I'm saying something bad about your country. Now you don't like me. Oh, please like me. Yeah. But, you know, don't we have a responsibility to keep our own trash away from the streets and from just flying around everywhere? Yeah. Do we appreciate the people who pick up the trash? Yeah. So there's, you know, we're totally dependent on strangers who do whatever jobs they do in society because we benefit from it. Yeah. When somebody, you know, you ordered food and they deliver the wrong thing, you ever had that happen? Or you order something from Amazon or some big, you know, network, and they send the wrong size. Yeah. And so you have to call the customer service department. Okay. Customer service, it sounds nice. It's basically where people complain. Yeah. So, any of you ever worked in customer service and dealt with all the complaining people? Oh, you're all such bodhisattvas. Oh, one person? Yeah, oh, okay. Oh, two people. Three? How many of you have contacted customer service in various industries and businesses and airports? Ah, yeah. Are you nice to the people that you contact?
Initially, yes.
What'd you say?
Initially, yes.
Initially, yes.
Until
Yeah. Yeah. And we, you know, people often take their anger out at strangers in customer service. They aren't the people who sent the wrong size or the wrong food. And I doubt that anybody actually sent the wrong thing deliberately. It's just mistakes people make. But what do you say? Your company, I ordered size 7 and you sent me size 6.5 and it doesn't fit. Yeah, and I need it. This is important. I'm sending it back to you. No, you come and pick it up. I'm not doing anything for you. You come and pick it up and you bring the right size. Yeah. And if you don't, let me talk to your boss because I'm going to tell them. Yeah. And the other person at the end of the line is just going like, you know, well, I'm trying to help this person get what they want. And they're swearing at me and telling me off. Yeah. So we have to remember, you know, these are human beings and they have feelings, and people in customer service are trying to help us. And when your airplane flight gets canceled and you're stuck somewhere, yeah, for you don't know how long. Anybody happen experience that? Yeah. And you know, you have to go rebook your flight. And it's, why did you cancel my flight? You know, I booked it in advance and I'm in a hurry. And they're trying to help us, but we just lash out at them. Okay, so if we really stop and think and look at around us, strangers are very kind to us. In fact, our whole life depends on them. Because they grow our food, they make our clothes, they do the research that brings the medicine that we take when we're sick. Yeah. They build the buildings. All these people from other countries who leave their families and their friends and their loved ones to come to Singapore to build your buildings. Would you do that? Yeah? Leave your loved ones, leave your kids, go somewhere else to build somebody else's homes? Huh? Do we even thank these people? Do we appreciate them? Yeah, we only have places to live, places to use, because of other people's labor. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we talked about friends and relatives. We've talked about strangers. What about enemies? So there are personal enemies, and then there are enemies, people that you don't like and don't approve of, even though maybe you don't personally know them, okay? Like people who make policies that you find that you disagree with, or policies that harm you, yeah? In the U.S. now, we have a few of those people around. Yeah, one of them is in charge of the National Health Department. And he doesn't believe, he has no science background, no medical background. And he says vaccines are hocus pocus. Yeah, and wants people to basically stop inoculating their kids. Okay. If you've been to India, any of you have been to India and seeing people begging on the street because they have polio and their limbs are deformed, they can't walk, they can't move? Yeah, who's seen that? It's awful, isn't it? Yeah, these people were born healthy. There was no vaccine available to them. And the polio virus spread around. They got it. Yeah, their limbs are deformed. They can't walk, they can't move, and so on. Yeah. And yet, there's somebody who wants to convince parents not to vaccinate their kids. And that just makes me shudder, because I would hate to see kids have polio. The polio vaccine came out when I was a little kid, and everybody brought their kids to be inoculated. We all went and took off, you know, bared one shoulder or the other, and they jabbed us. And he gave us a lollipop or something. Yeah. And thinking about it now, I have so much gratitude for the people who developed the polio vaccine, the people who distributed it, the people who inoculated us, all of us kids. Because I have a friend who got polio when he was a kid. Yeah, he lived in Taiwan, and he's translating some of the books that I've done. And, you know, he walks with a brace, and it's quite amazing, you know. And I one day asked him, like, what happened? He said he got polio when he was a kid. Yeah, and it's just painful to think that that could happen to other kids if they're not vaccinated, you know. Same with measles, same with smallpox, you know, all these things. So, you know, so to think of, you know, so for me, one person, you know, this guy in the U.S. who says, don't vaccinate your kids, He's not my favorite person in the world. Yeah, I really disagree with him. And the way that some of the immigrants are being treated, I really disagree with that and the people who are in charge of all of that. And yet, they're sentient beings who want to be happy and don't want to suffer. Yeah. And if I leave even one of them out of my cultivation of love and compassion, then there's no way for me to generate bodhicitta, and there's no way for me to attain Buddhahood. Because bodhicitta has to want to work for the benefit of every sentient being. Mm-hmm. So it takes some kind of fortitude, some inner strength, I think, to really develop these kinds of qualities. Now, some people say, oh, you must be Mahayana, you say that. But that's unrealistic. Yeah. You want to attain Buddhahood for all sentient beings? Unrealistic. Impossible. Yeah. I think that's kind of giving up before you even try. Yeah. And for me, bodhicitta is the thing that keeps me going. Yeah. I told you about my dream. So why am I happy talking about bodhicitta? Because it's the most stupendous kind of quality I can ever think of to develop. I'm very far from developing it, very far. But just the knowledge that it's possible to develop that kind of care and love and compassion for each and every sentient being, including the cockroaches, yeah, including the ants, yeah, including every living being. Just the idea that it's possible, even though I'm very far away from doing it, just gives me so much hope and so much optimism. Yeah. Why do I think it's possible? Well, Shakyamuni Buddha developed it. And we all have the potential to become Buddhas. So if the Buddha did it, he was once a sentient being. You know, he didn't just come, yeah. He wasn't created by God as a Buddha, you know. There's no God that created us. And even if there were, you know, nobody comes out as a Buddha. You know, we all start out as sentient beings. So he developed that quality. So that means I can too. So whenever I get in kind of yucky moods, I'm not in a good mood, or I'm discouraged or something like that, when I think that it's possible to develop bodhicitta, my mind brightens up. Yeah. And even though it's going to take eons and eons and eons to develop it and complete the bodhisattva path, yeah, it doesn't matter how long it takes because it's something worthwhile. Yeah. You don't want to spend even 10 minutes on something that's not worthwhile. But generating bodhicitta is very worthwhile. So it doesn't matter how long it takes us. Yeah. And I find also that having this long-term motivation, yeah, is so helpful in observing the law of karma and its effect. Because I stopped just thinking about my happiness now, which is what the self-centered attitude wants. Yeah. can take a long time. That's okay. I'm going in a good direction. And for me, you know, one of the things that I questioned when I was young is, what is the purpose of my life? Yeah, what's the meaning of my life? When I die, what do I have to show for having lived? Yeah. Even if you make $1 trillion, which Elon Musk is in the process of doing, even if you have that much, when you die, you can't take any of it. Yeah. Even if you live in the most luxurious house, when you die, it stays here. You go on. Even if you marry the most fantastic person who never, ever, ever criticizes you, yeah, you're going to have to separate when you die. Anybody ever met somebody that you love fantastically who has never criticized you? Oh, you've never had a fight with?
None.
Hmm?
None.
None. Yeah. True, isn't it? I told one person the other day that even if she married the Buddha, she would still be unhappy in her marriage. Yeah. She said, but if I marry the Buddha, you know, if he's a Buddha, then he's perfect. Yeah, but you aren't. Yeah. And as long as we have the seeds of ignorance, anger, attachment, jealousy, arrogance in us, we're going to have a fight with somebody, get mad at somebody, do things that, you know, are obnoxious. Guaranteed. Yeah. But even the people that we don't get along with, yeah, I'm not talking about your marriages now, maybe your former marriage. But even people who personally harm you, the last example I gave was somebody I don't know personally but is doing things for the country I disagree with. But even if somebody personally harms you, yeah, they still want to be happy and not suffer. And why are they doing harmful actions? Yeah, it's when somebody harms you, what they're really saying is, I'm unhappy. I'm suffering. How can I make that outrageous statement? Because happy people, yeah, don't wake up in the morning, I'm so happy today, everything's going to be so nice, and I feel so good, I think I'm going to go out and hurt somebody's feelings. Nobody thinks like that when they're happy. It's only when we're unhappy that people do things, you know, that harm other people. So are unhappy people, yeah, what does the Buddha say? Does the Buddha say that unhappy people are the people we should get mad at? Or does he say unhappy people are the people we should have compassion for? What do you think? Yeah, Buddha would say, unhappy people are the people we should have compassion for. Yeah. So when somebody harms us, that means no retaliation. Yeah. Not even in our mind. May they get hit by a truck. No. Yeah. May they be free of the attachment and the craving that is leading them to do harmful actions when they can't get what they want. Yeah. You don't pray, may they, you know, get what they want. May they be successful when they rob the store and rob the bank. No, when you want people to be happy, it doesn't mean that you're wishing that they get everything they want. Because sometimes, you know, we ignorant sentient beings want things that are not good for us and that harm us and harm other people. So we want to pray, you know, may they be free of that craving and attachment. Yeah. May they have a kind mind, a generous mind, and be free of that kind of pain. Okay, so that makes a sense to wish for other people. Okay? So, you know, really focusing on these three groups of friends, the people we care about, strangers, and enemies. Really focusing on them a lot and looking at our own reactions. And, you know, when we don't have a virtuous reaction, then stopping and trying to cultivate one. Yeah. And, you know, continually doing this. And then, you know, then thinking of other beings suffering, you know, and not just the ouch kind of suffering, you know, the ouch when your body gets hurt or your feeling gets hurt. But just, you know, you studied the different kinds of suffering. Yeah. So there's, you know, the what everybody recognizes as suffering. That, yes, we want people to be free of. But what we often call happiness, the Buddha said, is dukkha. Yeah. Suffering is not a very good translation, so I prefer to use the Pali and Sanskrit term dukkha, unsatisfactory. Yeah. So even we get what we want, how long does it last? It doesn't, our happiness is so fleeting. And sometimes we work so hard to get things and we get it and it just, it doesn't satisfy us at all. We're left still like, okay, I got that expensive fancy car. I want something else now. Okay. So the fact that our happiness doesn't last, that we're never satisfied by what we get, and that if we continue to have what we think is the objects of happiness, eventually that will turn into pain. For example, when you're hungry, you want to eat, right? You're suffering from hunger, you want to eat. When you start to eat, oh, it feels so good, doesn't it? You know, happiness is coming. If happiness were really in the food, the more you ate, the more happy you would be. What happens when you keep eating and then eat some more and eat some more? And eats more and more and more. Yeah. Do you wind up happier and happier? No, you wind up with a stomach ache. Yeah. So anything that we think is happiness, you know, you want to go to Bali, or you want to go on a cruise. Yeah. So you go on a cruise, you go to Bali. You go to Times Square, wherever you want to travel to. Yeah? And you get there, and then? Yeah? Oh, Bali, it's supposed to bring me happiness. But the beaches are so crowded, La. You know, why are people on the beach when I want to be on the beach? And that even you get a space on the beach, Yeah. And you're lying there in the sun. It feels so nice, the sun on you. How long does it take for you to get sunburn? Okay. So even the things that we think bring us happiness, they bring us some pleasure, but the pleasure doesn't last a long time. And it can even turn into unpleasant feelings. And then the third kind of suffering is, the Buddha said, the suffering of pervasive conditioning. In other words, we are conditioned beings. Yeah? We think that if we just make the determination to do something, we can do it. Okay, at the beginning of this session, we had a few minutes of silent meditation, and just watching the breath or whatever. How many of you did not get distracted during those three few minutes? Could you control your mind enough to not get distracted for a few minutes? No. Can you prevent your body from aging? No. Can you prevent your body from dying? No. Okay. So all these things happen due to causes and conditions, and we cannot control all the causes and conditions. So this is a type of dukkha as well, because we would really like to control all the causes and conditions. We would like to control the whole world, yeah, starting with the people in our family. And we can't control them. We cannot even control our own mind. Okay? So this is something actually we can make some headway on. You know, the Buddha taught us the methods to develop concentration. He taught us the antidotes to anger and jealousy and clinging and craving. Okay, so we can make some headway on that. But we have to create the causes for what we want. Yeah. We can't just sit there and pray, Buddha, 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 may I always be happy. And if I am, then I will make an offering to the temple. So first, Buddha, yeah, you bring me happiness, long term until the end of my life, happiness. And then I'll make the offering, except I'll be dead then. Okay. I'll write it in my will. Yeah. Yeah. But we can't just pray for things. We have to create the causes. And we have to also purify the causes of our non-virtue. You know, and do something about those. Okay, so bodhicitta, coming back to bodhicitta, is something that really helps us do all those things. Because the merit we create when we have the motivation of bodhicitta is so enormous, because we're motivated to be of benefit to each and every sentient being. If we do a virtuous action and we do it just for me, we create merit, but the merit is for the happiness of one person. If we think about doing something virtuous for everybody in the country, that's good. Yeah, we want to help. But that also is limited, because there's countless sentient beings. So if we just have that thought, you know, I want to do this action and create merit and then dedicate that merit for the enlightenment of each and every sentient being, then because we're motivated by care for each living being, the merit we create is incredible. And similarly, if we do purification practices, you know, if we do chanting, if we do prostrations, and so on, if we do these for the benefit, thinking, I want to attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings, then again, that purification becomes very, very powerful. Okay? So there's a lot more to say about bodhicitta, but I looked at the clock. So I'm going to pause here and see if you have some questions or comments.
In the three aspects of the path, usually before bodhicitta, there's a renunciation. So actually, how would you describe renunciation? Is it a physical renunciation, spiritual renunciation? Yes, you really help.
Okay.
Define renunciation.
Renunciation. Renunciation is, people think, oh, renunciation, that means I have to give up everything. Yeah, I have to go live on the street. I have to go live in some deserted place with nothing. Nothing. You know, we think that's renunciation. That's not renunciation. Okay? What are we renouncing? Not happiness. We want happiness. We are renouncing dukkha. We're tired of the dukkha in samsara, the unsatisfactory conditions in samsara. That's what we're renouncing. Okay? So we have to start out, you know, renouncing the dukkha in samsara, our own dukkha, and then we have to spread it to everybody else. Yeah, because like I was saying at the beginning, nobody wants pain, everybody wants well-being. Yeah, so when we renounce the dukkha of other living beings, all living beings, then that is a good factor for generating bodhicitta.
Thank you. Venerable, is there some noted difference between what we may call the bodhisattva vow and what we may call the bodhisattva precepts, such as in the Tibetan tradition?
No, they're the same. What would we say? Sometimes the word vow means the whole set of bodhisattva precepts. The word vow is a bit confusing in English, okay? Because we usually think a vow, never break it. And if you break it, whoo, to hell. And so, it you know, that's not, you're laughing. you know, so I tend to say bodhisattva precepts instead of vow. Sometimes the word vow is used to mean the set of precepts. Yeah, but does that answer your question, okay?
General, to develop and cultivate bodhicitta to fruition, mm-hmm. or maybe not to fruition, right, incrementally or suddenly, I wonder if you can comment about the dichotomy of the two paths, like one would be a more contemplative approach and the other would be a more, you know, action-oriented mm-hmm. approach.
Okay. So in other words, what do you do to cultivate bodhicitta? Okay, so I think we need a balance of different things. We need to learn the Dharma, because we can't practice it if we don't learn it. It's not just a question of sitting in meditation position and closing our eyes, you know. We have to learn the Dharma, so we learn what meditation is, how to meditate, how to concentrate, all these things. Okay. Just lost my train of thought. Tell me your question again.
If you could comment on the contemplative path.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. So we have to learn the Dharma. We have to put it into practice. Yeah, meditation practice. We have to serve sentient beings. We have to act. Okay. Now, these are just three general categories of things that we do to help create virtue and purify. So then we sit there and go, well, which one am I going to do? Oh, we're supposed to do all three. How can I do all three at once? Yeah. And so then you get really confused because you want to do everything all at once. Can you do everything all at once? No. And then you hear, oh, it's going to take three countless great eons to become a Buddha. Oh, God, you mean I have to do all that practice? And that's after you enter the first path. So you have to keep on what you're doing now. That doesn't count in the three countless great eons. Then once you enter the path, it's three countless. Oh, yeah, what am I going to do? How am I going to do that? Yeah. Well, we have many lifetimes. And it's really funny. Sometimes, I'll tell you what is a big waste of time regarding this. You say, okay, I'm going to study. That's the first thing she said, I'm going to study. So you study. While you're studying, why am I sitting here studying? I should be meditating and trying to actualize it. No, I should be doing something. Why am I studying? I should be putting it into action and helping sentient beings. So you stop your study. You go, you know, and start running 15 million charities to benefit sentient beings. And you're running around doing 15 million charities with all these sentient beings who do not say thank you. And you have no practice of patience or fortitude. So in the middle of it, you go, you know, why am I doing this? I want to go meditate and calm my mind. So you stop doing that. Then you sit down. Oh, meditation. Oh, my mind is so calm. But you know, when I was studying, that idea was pretty interesting. I want to learn more about that. The next meditation session. Oh, you know, all that charity work I was doing, I really enjoyed that. I should go back. You know, so my point is, yeah, when you're studying, you think, no, I should be benefiting others or practicing. When you practice, you think I should be studying or benefiting others. When you benefit others, you think I should be studying or practicing. This is the dissatisfied mind that is a huge distraction. Okay? So I learned something very important about this. Some of you may remember, some of you may be too young to remember, but there was one nun when I first came, I forget her name. I lived in her temple. It was off of Bendemeer Road. And she was the one, you know, the big Buddhist center on Lavender Street, that huge one with the Buddha on top of it.
Taipei,
yeah, the Taipei Buddhist Center. Huge thing. She was the one that built it. And so I went to talk to her one day and just thank her because I was living in her temple. And we started talking. And I just said, wow, you've done so much, because she was helping the students in the Pali. She was helping build this Buddhist center. She was doing all sorts of charity work. And I thought, wow, she's really tremendous. And she looked at me, you know, and I was commenting on this and thanking her. And she said, oh, but you give Dharma talks, you know. I don't do that. You give Dharma talks. You've studied a lot. You know? And somehow through this whole interchange, it made me realize that in different lifetimes we do different things. And even in different times in one lifetime, we do different things. Yeah. And so I look back in my own life, you know, there's been times when I really focus on study. I had the benefit of doing that initially for many years. Then, you know, time to practice. Now I'm abbess of a monastery. Ay, ay, ay. You know, now I specialize in writing emails. Yeah. That's all I do all day. Dear so-and-so, think for yourself. Stop asking these stupid questions. Delete, 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 delete. Oh, dear so-and-so, yes, I, you know, you have a problem. Here's the advice of it. You know? Oh, you know, the advice isn't so bad. It's like, oh, we're making the schedule for the retreat. Do you want the session to start at 8 or at 8:05? You know? Please, you're in charge of making the schedule. Set it up. Set it up yourself. You know? So in my own life, there's been, you know, different times when I do different things. And if you look over long periods of life, you know, that it's going to take a while to gain the realizations, to create the merit, you know, then different lifetimes, we will probably emphasize doing different things. Yeah, because bodhicitta wants us to create every kind of merit, because when you become a Buddha, you know, there's no limits on your knowledge. There's no limits on your kindness and compassion. There's no limits from your own side about what you can do. There's limits. Sentient beings have limits about what they can take in. But from when you're a Buddha, you don't have any limits on your skillful means. So, you know, we need to do a lot of things to really expand, you know, who we are and to make ourselves more and more capable. Yeah, because, you know, you don't, when you think of the Buddha, you don't think of somebody who gets angry. Yeah. Now, sometimes Buddhas may look like they're getting angry, because that's the only way they can get through to us. That's why the Dharma practitioners or the Dharma protectors, you know, when you see Dharma protectors, they're, you know, they aren't sitting there giving you chocolate. They look very ferocious, because that sometimes is the only way they can get through to us. Okay, but inside their mind, there's no anger, no hostility. Okay.
At the start of the talk, you mentioned you wanted to share something about Bhante.
Mm.
I'm curious what that was.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes there's so many misconceptions that one Buddhist tradition has about other Buddhist traditions. They all have misconceptions about each other, because in ancient times, they couldn't talk to somebody from another tradition. You know, if you lived in Sri Lanka, you couldn't talk to somebody in Tibet or somebody in China. If you lived in, you know, China, you couldn't talk to somebody in Thailand. You know, there wasn't the transportation and the communication. Now we can, and it's much better. But before, you know, there's just all these wrong ideas that the different traditions have about each other. Yeah. So many people say, this is a great one. Well, I won't go into all of it. Some of the wrong things are just too ludicrous to talk about. Okay. But one of them is to say certain traditions are selfish. Yeah. Our tradition, no, we're very generous. Their tradition is selfish. Okay. So one time, I was, going somewhere, you know, to teach. A center had invited me. And, you know, I'm coming from the U.S., and I'm not a rich person, and the convention is usually when you invite somebody, they benefactor your ticket, yeah. So when I got there, I was giving talks, and I said to the center that invited me, you know, I was expecting them to reimburse the cost of my ticket from the U.S., and they said, no. Okay. So I'm wondering what to do. I'm going around and, you know, giving the talks and everything. And then I came to give a talk at Buddhist Library. And always, you know, I would go say hello to Bunty first. And so I went to chat with Bunty. And he pulls out an envelope and he says, I hear that you have some trouble with the money for your ticket. Here, and he gave me the money for the ticket. And I didn't tell him, I don't know how he found out. It wasn't the Buddhist center, Buddhist library that invited me. But out of the goodness of his heart, you know, he heard somebody had problems and he did something. Another time, more recently, when I was a few years ago, maybe it was last year, I don't know, when I came, you know, to BL and I was talking with Bunty, and he told me that he had recently had a heart attack. And then he said that he was in the middle of counseling some people who had some problems and he was giving them Dharma advice. And he could sense that he was having a heart attack then. Yeah. Did he say, take me to the hospital and stop? He kept on talking to these people who had come to him for help and counseling. Ooh, you know? And he just thought, okay, you know, when the heart attack's over, when I finish counseling, then I'll go to the hospital. I was shocked when he said that, you know, because his life is so valuable. And you see, even now when he's quite old, yeah, what's he doing in Sri Lanka? He's working, you know, to distribute relief to people who are affected by the floods. Yeah. So this is, yeah, he's quite special. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way to end, huh? Yeah, so Bhante is a very good example for all of us. Yeah? And I think in his life, he's done all three. He's studied, he knows the Dharma well, he's practiced, and he's certainly offered a lot of service to people in Singapore. Okay, let's dedicate.